Much of Iowa got a coating of ice overnight, and even if you only had a short commute this morning, it might have been a challenge. Fender benders are causing snarls in many parts of the state. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. On this News Buzz edition, we'll find out about road conditions this morning and into the weekend. Also, in light of the strange incident at the Nelson Mandela Memorial, we'll talk with a sign language expert. We'll learn about body armor for police dogs. We'll find out why two Iowans have made it their mission to run in all 99 counties. And finally, we'll check in with Des Moines Register columnist Kyle Munson to have him share his top 10 oddball Iowa animal tales for 2013. Buckle up for our Friday News Buzz edition after this news from NPR. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We've arrived at Friday, and we are buzzing with news, a News Buzz edition of our program today. And coming up later in the hour, in light of the strange incident at the Nelson Mandela Memorial, we're going to talk with a sign language expert to find out more about how that language is different than the spoken or the written word. And we'll also learn more about body armor for police dogs. Perhaps you didn't know that many of our police dogs in the state do have body armor. We'll find out more about that. Why two Iowans, Dennis Lee and Darren Schumacher, have made it their mission to run in all 99 counties. And also, finally, we'll check in with Des Moines Register Iowa columnist Kyle Munson. We'll have him share his top 10 oddball Iowa animal tales for 2013. You'll want to stay tuned for that coming up toward the end of the hour. But first, much of Iowa got a nice coating of ice overnight. And even if you only had a short commute this morning, it might have been a challenge due to the ice. Fender benders causing snarls in many parts of the state. Bob Uni is with us, state maintenance engineer for the Iowa Department of Transportation. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me on today.
Thanks for being on. You know, what are the current road conditions? It was pretty slippery when I came to work this morning.
Well, here we go. It's winter again in Iowa.
Sure is.
So we had a kind of a persistent storm that's not real bothersome, but pesky. And I think it's just a good reminder. Here it is winter again, and we need to drive like it's winter.
Mm-hmm. So what were the worst parts of the state as far as the ice?
Well, the whole state got something, but right now the persistent part of it is in kind of the eastern half of the state.
Okay. And how thick is that ice, Ben?
Oh, it's real thin. You know, it doesn't take very much ice to be problematic, whether it's an inch or just a fraction of an inch. If it's ice, it's a problem.
Yeah. I remember right, Bob, last year we had some real thick coats of ice that were horrible.
Well, that was that late December blizzard, and that was kind of I like to think of that as an anomaly. It isn't going to happen very often, but we had packed snow and ice because of all the trucks and cars on it. Because the snow came so fast, it was 3-4 inches thick in places.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you at the DOT have new strategies, technologies to deal with this. In fact, I was out last night doing some shopping, and I was noticing a plow truck, and it seemed like it was spraying something out the back before it was icing up. What would I have seen there?
Well, Ben, we've been using brine, which is just salt and a 23% solution of salt, for a number of years now. And you know, you put a piece of rock salt down, it doesn't do anything until it starts to liquefy and turn to brine. Otherwise, it's just a piece of rock sitting there.
Sure.
So we sort of skip the melting stage and accelerate that and go to liquids at times.
Oh, I see. So that's what I saw probably.
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh. And when I'm maneuvering around a truck like that, do I have to, you know, you want to stay well away from those trucks, but it's otherwise, any advice in how motorists should deal with those trucks?
Well, I'm going to have to admit to sometimes being an impatient motorist, and I sort of have to calm my enthusiasm in the winter, just like my advice would be to your listeners. Let's just give the truck a break here. They move slower than we do. And it wouldn't be helpful to our car if we run into a snowplow truck, and it wouldn't be safe either. So we just need to have some patience, and let's drive like it's winter again. And we average maybe 22 to 25 winter events in a year, and we got a couple of them under our belt, but that means we got a lot of them to go yet.
Yeah, right. And those first few ones, we always have a little bit of a learning curve, it seems, Bob. At least when I go out and we have our first snow or ice, and we have, you know, you can imagine the conversations in cars, people driving like there's nothing different out there, right?
Well, there you go. But, you know, Ben, I think you bring up a really good point. You talked about maybe education a little bit. I think maybe when a winter starts, it's an opportunity for us as maybe seasoned drivers to take our kids out, maybe our grandkids out, who have not had winter experience driving, and talk about some of these things that we're going to visit about here today.
Oh, you know, I remember that from high school. My driver's ed teacher actually telling me, go with your parent to a nice big parking lot where there's nothing to run into and just see how your car operates differently and how you can't stop necessarily when you want to.
I think that would be a great opportunity for us to pass along some of our skills to the younger drivers. I like the idea.
Bob, I want to go over to Dennis Reese now with us, our weather guru, because he's always got his pulse on the latest National Weather Service forecast. So, Dennis, what do we have in store for the weekend, especially pertaining to a weekend where a lot of people will be getting out onto the roads in Iowa and the Midwest?
Well, we had ice, and Ben, now we have snow to look forward to. In fact, a lot of snow, especially in east central and southeast Iowa, moving in Saturday night. That will continue through Sunday, up to 8 inches, as a matter of fact, in east central and southeast Iowa. But this winter storm watch affects a large part of Iowa. The Des Moines metro and up to Waterloo not getting quite as much snow. In fact, Jeff Johnson of the National Weather Service, who will be on the newscast at 12:30, explains it this way. You draw a line from Des Moines to Waterloo. Areas to the southeast of that line are in the winter storm watch. And he also said they may very well upgrade that to a winter storm warning later today. So we're in for a winter storm, no question about that. And again, up to 8 inches of snow. Also in the far south, maybe some more ice will be a problem in far southern Iowa again Saturday night into Sunday.
Dennis Reese, thank you very much. Bob Uni, having heard that, you're certainly well aware of the forecast, keeping your finger on the pulse of it as well. So what are you doing at the DOT to prepare for what looks like a pretty big winter storm hitting a significant part of the state?
Well, I think the bad news here is our DOT weather forecaster agrees with Dennis.
Okay.
So we got something coming. But, you know, it's just another winter storm. I think we need to be aware of it. And I think it'd be a good thing to consider whether or not we want to do traveling during these events. Maybe we can lead an event or lag an event if we have some trips that we can do that on. And I think it's always good to look at the upcoming winter weather and also take a look at our winter road conditions. And that website, for anybody who wants to check your winter weather road conditions, is www.511ia.org, www.511ia.org. And that is the most up-to-date information that you're going to get on road conditions. And so the more winter weather we have, you know, the more likelihood there's going to be of roads not quite the way we'd like to have them.
You know, and I really like the feature the DOT has there for mobile, for smartphones, Bob. You have you can look at your map wherever you are. As long as you have smartphone service, you're covered there, that you can see how roads are in your particular area on a map. That's a really nice feature that the DOT has been offering.
I think it's very useful to the motorists, and I guess I'd urge everybody to take advantage of it. And relative to us getting ready for storms, this is going to sound funny, but we talk about snow year-round and look for ways to improve what we're doing and improve what we're trying to accomplish. So we've got about 1,000 people in the DOT that plow snow, and we have statewide coverage, and we move our resources around as needed. And so there's a possibility with kind of poor weather coming in the southeast part of the state, there's a potential we may move some of our resources from places that aren't so impacted.
Okay, how many trucks do you have out in the state at your disposal?
Well, we have 901 trucks, and as we talk, I just took a snapshot of what we have out right now. We have 425 trucks out as of about 11:45 this morning, so about half the fleet's out working right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's a question you might not be able to answer, but how many pots of coffee do you think you'll go through this weekend?
Oh, boy. That's maybe the impossible question. You know, we have a lot of really dedicated employees, and the way they look at it, they're plowing the roads for their, you know, for their families, because their family drives where they plow snow, and their relatives and their friends, and they really take it seriously. And so we work on up to 12-hour-long shifts, and we give people 8 hours off, and then get into rotations, 12-hour rotations until the storm is done and the roads are clear, and then we repair and get ready for the next storm.
Yeah, right. And when we have significant snow on the ground or falling and the plows are out plowing the highways, the interstates, the county roads, What are the do's and don'ts as motorists? What do you find is unhelpful for your people out in the plows that people may be doing?
Okay, well, there's a couple things. First thing is something that I think people should be doing year-round, 24/7, 365 when you're driving. That is put on your seatbelt. But not only that, if you're the driver, insist that your passengers put their seatbelt on. That's going to save your life potentially. So that's important. Pass that on to your kids. Do a drill of driver's training with them. Other things are that it's just a bad idea to use cruise control in the winter. I love my cruise control, but if we have road conditions that are not normal, it's going to get you into jam if you use your cruise control, and there's no sense doing that. Apart from that, let's just be patient and give each other a little break here. You know, we have a whole lot of different drivers out there, young drivers, old drivers, medium drivers with different skill levels, and let's just give everybody a break, take a little more time. You know, plan your trips such that if you have to go, give yourself a little more time.
Okay. Very good advice from you, Bob Uni, State Maintenance Engineer for the Iowa DOT. Let's hope that we have no more than fender benders out there with the severe weather moving into the state. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, a News Buzz edition, a chance for a quick roundup of news through some conversations, some news we didn't get to earlier this week. Well, you remember that fake sign language interpreter who stood feet away from world leaders, including President Obama, at Nelson Mandela's memorial, man causing an uproar at the ceremony in Johannesburg on December 10th when he used sign language interpretations that deaf groups say were little more than nonsensical gesticulations. Lindsay Kang is with us, a state-certified sign language interpreter. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi.
Briefly, tell us what happened with this Nelson Mandela Memorial interpreter.
Well, of course I don't know for sure because I wasn't there, but allegedly this gentleman has been offering his services as an interpreter to the government in the past, and they were confident with those services because they were completely unaware that he wasn't offering a quality interpretation or, in this case, any interpretation at all.
Mm-hmm. Was someone familiar with sign language? You sign, I assume?
Yes, I'm an interpreter.
Yeah. Did you look at the tapes there? What was going on? Were his signs actual signs and just not put together in any meaningful way? Was it the equivalent of word salad?
It appears to me to be the same four gestures over and over and over again. And, of course, each country has its own individual sign language, so I couldn't tell you for sure if those are four actual signs in his signs language. But as an interpreter, I just look at this and I think, oh, my gosh, there is no information there. There is no facial expression, no body language, which is 90% of our signed language is facial expression and body language. So if any deaf people that were watching were able to pick up anything at all, it would amaze me.
Mm-hmm. So sign languages are different depending on the area in the world you are, that they vary just like we have different languages on different continents?
Yes, and they actually vary regionally inside a country as well. I'm originally from Texas. I just moved up here to Iowa in August, and the local dialects are even different. Like in Texas, you know, we say everything's Coke, and up here they say pop. Well, yep. That's a different sign. So,
but is there a such thing as a drawl in sign language? I don't imagine in Texas.
Well, people definitely have their own accent, and every person that signs just a little bit differently, which is why as an interpreter, it's great when you get to the appointment early and you get to speak with the client for maybe 10 or 15 minutes just to get adjusted to their style of signing. Just like some people talk fast, some people talk slow, some people use a higher register, some people use a lower register. It's much the same.
Mm-hmm. An email question from one of our listeners, Lindsay. What qualities make for a good interpreting session?
What qualities make for a good interpreting session? I would say that a lot of people are afraid to check the interpreter's credentials, or they don't think to do it at all. And I would definitely ask the interpreter to see their card or ask them what their history is interpreting, just to make sure that you're deaf client is getting a quality interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
I've honestly been waiting for somebody to ask to see my card ever since I got it. No one ever has. I think that some good pointers would be try to sit in really good lighting if possible. Try to speak clearly. And one of the things that I'd really like to emphasize is if you hire an interpreter, that interpreter is a non-entity. Speak directly to the deaf person, say you or Miss or Mr. whatever, and talk directly to that person, because if you say, can you tell him to do that? Can you tell her to do that? You're effectively removing the deaf person from the conversation, and you're having a conversation with the interpreter, and it shouldn't be like that. It should be person to person. The interpreter should be really a non-entity.
I see your point. Gets to my next point. How many emotions, how much of this job of interpretation is communicating with facial expressions and body language emotions?
Emotions are definitely all on the face and your body language. There's a lot of eyebrows, and the way you move your mouth is definitely important, because you can sign the same sign and change the meaning just with your face.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot. It's 90% of American Sign Language is facial expression and body language.
For the average person, Lindsay, how long does it take to be a proficient in sign language?
You know, that depends on a lot of factors. I started signing in 2007, and I would say it probably took me about 3 years to really feel comfortable with the language. But keep in mind that I was going to deaf socials, deaf clubs. I had deaf friends. I was really immersed and exposed to the language. And I also have an aptitude for languages. It's definitely something I'm very interested in. So depending on how much you are willing to put yourself in the community and surround yourself with the language, and if you really enjoy what you're doing, that can definitely impact how long it'll take you to feel comfortable with the language.
Lindsay Kang, state-certified sign language interpreter. We want to thank you for joining us and explaining a few things to us.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
And finally, before we take a break, we recently heard about a couple donating funds to the Iowa City Police Department to purchase body armor for the department's two canine officers, their dogs. And it made us curious about the use of body armor for police dogs in the state. So let's talk with Captain Jim Steffen. He is with the Iowa City Police Department. Captain Steffen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
What is the new equipment that these donors made possible?
Basically, they're bulletproof vests, comparable to what the police officers are wearing. They're level 2, and they're also stab resistant.
Okay. What motivated these donors?
Well, it's my understanding that they were watching the news and saw a story about another department that had just recently either purchased or were given funds to purchase a vest for their dog. They called me up and inquired if our two canines had a vest. I told them no, and then they indicated they were interested in donating the funds to make that possible.
What will this level of vest cost? What will each one cost approximately?
Well, actually, we already have the vests, and we got a Cyber Monday sale. We bought it out of a police canine business out of Colorado, and it was just under $1,700 for both vests.
Okay, so this is a significant investment, but these dogs are significant investments besides your friends and your fellow officers, aren't they?
That's correct. It takes anywhere from $12,000 to $15,000 to get the training and get the dog on the road.
What are the names of your canine officers?
Wrecker is a Dutch Shepherd, and Luke is a German Shepherd.
Mm-hmm. So have they had a chance to try on this armor?
Yep, they tried them on. They seem pretty happy with them. The armor is designed not to limit their mobility that much. It's a little heavier for them. Really, the only concern would be in the summer months when it's hot,
right.
Making sure the dog doesn't overheat.
I have a pretty smart dog at home, but I don't imagine my dog would understand having body armor put on it. Wrecker and Luke, they don't understand it, do they?
You know, I don't think they understand it yet, but they had no issue with putting it on. And when the Fouts's, the couple that donated the money, came for a demonstration, we put the armor on and gave the demonstration, and, you know, the dogs had no issues with it.
Captain Stephan, can you give me an example of a situation where a dog would be well-suited to have body armor like this?
Well, it'd be probably any incident where, say, like a building search. If we're going to search a building and we're not sure if there's somebody inside that may have a weapon, when the dog goes in, this will just give them that much more protection if mm-hmm. they confront an armed subject.
So armed with a knife, so to an attempt to stab the dog, that would be stopped by the vest?
Yes, yeah. The vests we purchased were also stab resistant.
So stab resistant, stopping bullets?
Yes, also stops bullets.
Mm-hmm. Do you know how widespread the use of body armor is in canine units in Iowa?
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with the preference of the handler. Some handlers don't particularly care for them. I know one of our previous handlers really didn't care to use it. Both handlers now, I think it's a good idea, and we're very happy when we purchased them. So I couldn't give you an exact number, but I think a lot of it has to do with the preference of the handler.
Right. How have the use of canine units grown in the last few years? What's your understanding, your perception of that in police departments, not only in the state, but in the country?
Well, you know, they've expanded use. Our dogs are trained, dual trained, so they're trained to identify illegal drugs. They're also trained in tracking, and then they're also trained for biting. Mm-hmm. If they confront a aggressive subject to protect their handler.
So in the areas, things that they can do better than humans are just using their enormous potential or ability to sniff. And also to just threaten a person.
Correct. And then the tracking, let's say somebody walks away from a nursing home or something like that, we can get the dog to track that down. They're not trained to bite at the end of a track, and typically the dog stays close to the handler when they track. So, or if, you know, it was probably several years ago, we had another agency was involved in a chase, and the driver of the car fled the vehicle, and they called us in to assist. And the dog tracked the person close to 3 miles in sub-zero weather and ended up finding him hid in a corn bin.
Mm-hmm. We have just a few seconds left, but what happens to your canine officers when they retire?
Well, that's up to the canine handler. They get the first option to get the dog.
Okay. So they're well taken care of in any case, I imagine.
Yep, I'm part of the family.
Captain Jim Stephan, thank you for telling us a little bit about police dogs with body armor. Captain Stephan of the Iowa City Police Department, thank you.
Yep, bye-bye.
When we come back, more of our news buzz on this edition of River to River. We'll talk with two Iowans who have made it their mission to run in all 99 counties. That coming up. Also, oddball animal stories from Kyle Munson, the top 10 he has listed in his column. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. As we prepare to feast over the holidays and give our digestive systems a workout, we're going to be talking about gut health on Monday on this program. The bacteria, good and bad, that we have in our digestive tract. Also, well, the parasites that can reside there and the problems they can present. That's Monday on this program, a full hour, different facets of gut health, a gut check, I guess we're calling that program. Today, it's a News Buzz edition of our program, and we're having some quick conversations about news items that we didn't get to earlier this week. And now we want to talk with two Iowans, Dennis Lee and Darren Schumacher. They've made it their mission to run in all 99 counties. We've spoken with them. Iowa Public Radio has. I think Charity Nebbe did with them earlier, but we want to get an update. Dennis Lee, you're with us?
Yes. And
hey, Ben.
Hi, Darren Schumacher. Hi to you as well.
Hello.
And let's get an update, but remind us before you do, tell us how far you've gone in your mission. Tell us, when did you start and why?
Actually, we started 4 years ago today. We started sort of on a whim, just for fun, and soon we said we should do this for a cause to raise money for the American Heart Association, and it sort of snowballed from there.
Okay, so in how many counties have you had runs?
We have
That's
run.
A good question.
Let's
as
go.
Of,
yeah, Lee, go ahead.
Yeah.
Dennis Lee. Yeah.
Yeah. As of last weekend, we ran 49.
49 counties. Are they all spread all over the state, or?
Yeah, they're pretty widespread. Most we have a very tight bunch that we've ran around Cedar Rapids, because when we started, that's where we kind of spun out from. But after we started knocking them off and decided we were going to do them all, we started venturing out further. So we wanted to keep a few easy ones left on for rainy or snowy days.
And how much do you run in each county, Dennis?
We run at least 26.2, but we always run from west to east, from border to border. So obviously some are longer than others. We've run as far as 45 miles.
Okay, so you make sure you run at least a marathon, and is that in a marathon distance? Is that in one go?
Yes. Yep. Always, and we run the whole thing, and it's always one at one time.
Darren Schumacher, what have been the biggest challenges that you've encountered?
Well, sort of like today, you mentioned gut checks. We've had several gut checks throughout the course of our journey. We've been out there for as long as 6 hours and 30 minutes. We've run more than 30 counties, or more than 11 counties, excuse me, that are more than 30 miles. We've been in weather like it is today. We've been in hot weather. Any trials and tribulations that anybody experiences on a day-to-day basis and trying to make themselves healthy. And our goal here is try to inspire others to become healthy and take an active role in their own health.
Okay, so you're raising awareness and also raising money. How are you raising money?
Well, we have an arrangement with the American Heart Association. They provide us with websites. We have a website for every county, and people can just go online and donate for each county run. And we're trying to raise $250 per county.
Mm-hmm. And are you on track in doing that?
No.
Okay.
No, we're pretty much better at running than we are at raising money. We're actually hoping we need to find some sponsors.
Right.
That's what we need to do to step up and say, yeah, we're going to pay you this much for each county that you do. Because right now we're at only 10% of our money to raise, and obviously we're at almost 50% of the miles we need to run.
And I'll bet if people want to type into a browser, a search engine, Team 99 Counties, they're going to find you, right?
Yes. Yep. We're on Facebook, and we have our own website. And from the website, there's a link to the American Heart Association website where they can pick whatever county they want to donate to.
Darren, how are your legs, your feet holding up?
Well, that varies from day to day. Dennis and I just recently, on the last three consecutive weekends, we ran Harrison County in western Iowa, which was 30 miles, followed up by Wayne County in a blizzard in south-central Iowa, and then we ran Decatur County in south-central Iowa. So right now, Dennis and I are very literally ready to kick our feet up and enjoy the holiday season.
Dennis, do you have any memorable encounters with locals to report?
Oh, my. Too many to almost remember. We're always running into people. The one I always remember is I think we were running in Muscatine County, and we ran into a gas station. It was very far across the county, and a local asked us what we were doing. We said we're running across the county for American Heart Association, and Darren actually let it slip that we still had 20 miles to run. And people just look at us strange, but it's those things, and we've had a couple things like that happen where we'll explain what we're doing, and then the reality sets in, like, you know, we already ran 14 miles, so we got 20 miles left. That's pretty miserable.
Yeah. Darren, do you have a favorite moment to share?
Not really. Just like Dennis mentioned, we just hope to have a random run-in with anybody or have anybody listen to our story or read our story and really become inspired to take an active role in their own health. You know, you can sit around and let time pass you by, but if you want to do the things you need to do to be around longer, you need to take that first step, and we hope to push people in the right direction.
Darren, how long have you been in running?
Oh, I ran in high school, and we picked it up when I moved to Cedar Rapids, probably in about 2007 or so, and I know Dennis has been at it much longer than I have.
How long have you been at it, Dennis?
I started in 97. And it was a matter. I ran in high school too, but actually never ran a race. I was going to run cross country my senior year, but had a motorcycle accident before school started, which knocked me out of running for 14 years. I didn't much run, and then one day it just happened to where I actually saw a guy with a shirt that said "Fear is the thief of dreams," and I decided to sign up for a marathon and train and run in 97, and that's how I started running again.
During these hours of running, putting miles and miles behind you, by the way, if you just joined us, Dennis Lee and Darren Schumacher, my guests, they've made it their mission to run marathons, at least marathons, in all of Iowa's 99 counties. Dennis, what are you doing? Are you listening to music, listening to audiobooks, listening to Iowa Public Radio, perhaps, as you jog through Iowa?
Well, I have music in one ear, usually. And usually we listen to each other ramble along. I mean, we jibber jabber the whole way across. Typically, I mean, there's always, we've never really run out of things to talk about, unless the pain hits us. Like Wayne County, that cold couple weeks ago, there wasn't very much talking, and there was no music that day. It was just head down and keep pushing, and that's sometimes the way it is. But most times it's just talking back and forth between us.
Darren, can others join you if they see you and they know of, perhaps reported in a local setting? Can people come out and run with you?
Yes, that's actually encouraged. We've had a couple of friends from the local running club cross a couple of counties with us. And for anybody out there listening, if you're interested in running a part, a whole distance, a few miles of any particular county, just get a hold of us on Facebook. We have 50 more counties to go, so more than likely, whatever county you reside in or would like to visit, we have not yet crossed, and we're always looking for company and help getting across the county from one end to the other. Greatly appreciated.
Now, you're having, I hope, a happy four-year anniversary to starting this mission to run in all 99 Iowa counties. 50 more, is that at least 4 more years of work for you? Dennis?
Well, I hope not. I mean, we were hoping to be further along now, but I've had a few injuries that impeded our progress, some feet issues, but now I think we're back on track, and I've got a better regimen of stretching. And I mean, I'm older. I think it's part of the problem. My tendons and things don't stretch as well as they used to, so. I had to pick up some different habits to keep myself from getting injured, but hopefully we'll be done before another 4 years.
Dennis, it sounds like there might be even a small question in your mind that you may not finish this, so you're going to finish it, right?
Oh, we're going to finish one way or another. It's just the injury thing. Here, maybe a couple years ago, I had a question, or even last year, where I had plantar fasciitis and lots of pain running, and there might have been a question, but not anymore. I think we're on track, and we're going to make it.
Mm-hmm. Typically, long time runners can have joint problems. Darren, any of those in your group there?
Not so much. I mean, there's always something to complain about if you want to, but as Dennis mentioned, we've had a good relationship of being able to, when one's up, the other one is down. We lean on each other pretty good, and I think supporting each other will be able to get through anything, and we're committed now. We've spent enough time on the road and running. We're going to finish this thing, hopefully, before it kills us.
Dennis Lee, remind us how listeners can find out more about this awareness-raising and money-raising action for the American Heart Association, your Team 99 Counties mission here.
Okay, you can go to team99counties.com, or you can find us on Facebook at Team 99 Counties.
Okay, what's your next run? What's your next scheduled one?
We're kind of hitting South Central Iowa, so we're looking at maybe Lucas, Marion, Mahaska, or Keokuk, possibly.
Okay, so you make it sounds like you make these plans real kind of short term, spur of the moment.
Yeah. Typically, it's maybe a week in advance. We're not running this weekend. It's the first weekend we took off, and
you would have had a chance to run through a nice blizzard. Too bad.
Yeah. Fortunately, it worked out. Usually, we plan them so we end up running in the worst weather somehow, but. And we talked about that. You know, if we planned around the weather, we'd be probably knocking at about 25% of the counties instead of 50, because we've had our fair share of poor weather.
Okay. Dennis Lee, Darren Schumacher, Shoemaker.
Hey, Ben, could I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
I want to make a shout-out to our support crew. Chris Lee is my wife, and she's the one that hauls us around a majority of the time. So I just wanted to say thanks to her.
Okay, very good.
For all the help.
Thank you, Team 99 Counties. Keep it up, and we'll look forward to having you get in all 99 counties with your marathon runs.
Yeah, thank you, Ben.
Thanks.
Finally, today on River to River, we want to check in with Kyle Munson, the Des Moines Register, Iowa columnist. Kyle, hi. How are you doing? Are you there?
Good, Ben. Yes. Back, and hope things are going well.
We wanted to talk about your top 10 oddball Iowa animal tales for 2013, and one line stuck out at me. I had a laugh-out-loud moment. For a relatively flat state without a single mountain, Iowa is obsessed with mountain lions.
Yes, that's right, yeah. So, I guess I couldn't resist. Of course, we've been talking about a certain pig on this show before that was running loose in the capital city. But, yeah, mountain lions. You know, the DNR basically says the vast majority of mountain lion sightings are false. So, you know, people mistake bobcats for mountain lions, large dogs, whatever. But, you know, we have seen, I mean, there was one shot just this month up near Rock Valley, Iowa. So, yes, there are mountain lions in the state, and they are being spotted. But, you know, there are not thousands of them just waiting to eat your small children. So.
In your column, you reported that since 2010, was it the DNR had a couple thousand reports, didn't they?
Yeah. And so that's what they say, you know, over 95% of the reports are likely, they suspect, to be false sightings. And I was looking around, I saw another interesting statistic, too. You know, in the last 150 years of nationwide, only 19 people have been killed by mountain lions. So, you know, again, the odds are, and it's not happened in Iowa.
Right. You know? Right. So when you think you see a mountain lion, maybe not the first thing on your mind is making sure it's a lot mountain lion, but whatever it is, it's a big and cat-like, and maybe you just want to get out of there, right?
Right. So. Yeah. But the one that the most people in Iowa saw in the last year was the one that was exhibited at the Iowa State Fair in the DNR booth. And that was a certified, you know, mountain lion that was shot in Des Moines the year before. So.
Before we go to others on your oddball animals list, we had one late entry. I don't think he made your list because it was just in your column just the other day. An albino deer was poached near Prairie City.
Yeah, and that was more. It's almost like more of a sad tale than an oddball one. Apparently there's some small. Now people they say that again. You know, the DNR says that the statistically albino deer amongst the population of deer. It's about 1 in 100,000. They're fairly rare. But around Colfax, people had been getting used to seeing one or perhaps a handful of albino deer. And so apparently one was shot recently and also poached. Somebody had the hunter who accidentally shot it, you know, fessed up and paid a fine of $120-some. But then somebody also subsequently sawed off the antlers. So.
So
people are sad. People are sad. It had become kind of this seasonal icon. You know, in the area
to talk about seeing the albino deer, and they can live many years. Yeah, let's talk about some of the other animals you have listed on your top 10 oddball animal tales for 2013. You had a moose on the loose.
Oh yes, the moose on the loose. Yeah, I remember several years ago I was tracking a black bear around Iowa, and people were citing that. But yeah, there was a moose. To the best of my knowledge, who may, you know, a young male moose may still be wandering down somewhere in eastern or southeastern Iowa, strayed down from Minnesota. And he had been spotted around Cedar Rapids, around Clear Lake, and there was one theory that perhaps a moose that wanders that far south into the warmer climates might be diseased. And I my line was, well, yeah, I suppose that, you know, that's probably the standard Minnesotan joke. Yet any creature that comes strays down to Iowa must have something wrong with them. But, and then we think the same about Missouri.
So. Now, do you know if mooses are native to Iowa as the mountain lions were at one time?
Yeah, you know, not to my knowledge, but you know, I'm not a DNR wildlife biologist, but to my knowledge, we are not their native habitat. So okay. It would have been eons, I would be guessing, if there was a moose that was born and bred here.
Now, a moose would be one thing to run into in your backyard or while you're out for a walk, but you have another on the list that I wouldn't like to run into either. You've got a couple of alligators. Chompy the Gator, a smaller
one. Yeah, Chompy. I put Chompy at number 10. It was kind of a cute little story. Somebody who had this gator in Waterloo who didn't realize that, you know, unless they were a veterinarian or there were other, you know, they had other expertise or extenuating circumstances, you know, it really wasn't lawful for them to have this pet. And so Chompy, he was transferred from one office to another, waiting for somebody to adopt him and get him out of the state. I probably would have rated, put him higher on the list had I, you know, but after I published this, then he also ended up on Saturday Night Live as a joke during Seth Meyers' Weekend Update.
Oh, in what way? Just a.
He made reference to, you know, just the absurdity of it, and then somebody he was thinking about. I think there was some sports figure or something whom he suggested that maybe he could adopt Chompy. So it was some little riff like that that he had. So anyway, so Chompy got his little 5 seconds of SNL fame too.
Let's move over to the warm-blooded creatures. A wounded goose, a goose somewhere with an arrow stuck through its breast?
Yeah, that was in West Des Moines. So that was January. I think that was the earliest oddball the animal to make my list. So people, you know, there's people see flocks of geese around apartment complexes all the time. So this wild Canada goose happened to have an arrow stuck through its breast, and it didn't seem too bothered by it. You know, it was, you know, it would still eat, it would still fly, and but obviously people were concerned, and they, you know, somebody tried to capture it by throwing a blanket over it, didn't work. To the best of my knowledge, there's a, you know, a goose still flying around somewhere, I assume somewhere south with an arrow through it.
We had Willie the Pig made the list. He's the one we talk about. What was his ultimate
right.
fate? He was into the Des Moines area as well.
Willie, it was Willie's fall in a lot of ways. He ran around Des Moines for months. I had fun writing more columns than I ever imagined about him. And then he was adopted by a nice family up in rural Ogden, Iowa. So he's had his own palatial shed and yard and everything up there. And he's eating like a king, I'm sure. So I'm sorry. Willie is a she. So she is eating like a queen anyway.
Been renamed Wilhelmina, or are we just going to stick with Willie probably?
They were just going to stick with Willie. Didn't want to confuse the poor beast too much. So,
a goat makes it onto your list. How so?
When we talk about danger in the city from creatures, maybe this is even worse than a mountain lion, because this goat stopped traffic in October on the south side of Des Moines, and then it had to be tranquilized with a dart gun. So, it ran out into the middle of traffic. The horns were blaring. My register colleague Regina Zilbermans was covering the goat fiasco. But anyway, so they got it. Goats eat anything, and so that almost scares me as much as a mountain lion, I think.
And one more we have time for, which is actually, you point out in your column, not quite a living animal, but an animal nevertheless. The butter cow at the fair had problems this year.
It's not a living animal, but let's face it, it's probably the most beloved animal in the state. And so we had these alleged animal rights activists, that splattered the butter cow overnight with red paint. And so that became a state fair kind of fiasco, international media moment. And so, you know, that cow did not have to take a step to end up in oddball news this year.
Okay, before we go, hearkening back to the moose oddball story here, I wanted to propose to you, since we have one moose in the state, that we do something. You're a wordsmith. You know, one mouse and many mice. one goose, many geese. So why isn't one moose and then many meese?
Oh, you're going to get, I don't know.
You know, if we get that second moose in the state, we're going to turn to you and want an answer, Kyle.
All right. Let me ponder that one. I like that. I like that, Ben. Okay. I'll think about that one.
Kyle Munson, Iowa columnist with the Des Moines Register. Thanks for joining us again, Kyle.
Yeah. Hey, Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year to you. Happy holidays. Speaking of the wild animals inside you, prepare for a show on Monday that will deal with bacteria and possible parasites that get into your gut. It's a gut check program Monday on River to River. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We hope you have a great weekend. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.